Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com, and sitting beside me as always is Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net. Hello, Hannah.
Hello, Charlie.
What are we drinking tonight?
We are drinking a wine called The Beach House. And I just figured that we're in the middle of summer here, and it said on the wine bottle that it goes with campfires and barbecues, or on its own with snacks at sundown.
We have none of those right now.
We have absolutely zero of those
right now. We have sundown right now.
We have a little sundown, but I am just going to pretend that, as it says it tastes like a holiday in a glass. So I am going to go with that, and we will get on with our own little podcast holiday.
I would not want this by a campfire. It's a little too dry.
I don't know. I can see. I think it would be good with a s'more.
Maybe.
So next time.
We have a really big in the news movie to talk about today, and that is Suicide Squad. Now, even before anybody saw it, before fans saw it, before critics saw it, it exploded the internet with this controversy. People were saying Marvel bribed the critics to write nasty things about it. People are inherently biased against DC comic characters, which is the Batman-Superman universe. Rotten Tomatoes needed to go away because they're impacting the film. They're hurting the film. Hannah, did any of this impact you?
None of it impacted me. At all, except that I think I actually agree with the Rotten Tomatoes on this one. It really is just Suicide Squad, by the way, is in the movie, and it's just simply not very good.
I agree. It's sour. I did not appreciate it. So right off the bat, I'd never heard of any of these characters. You know, Joker's in there. Okay, I've heard of Joker, and I think I've heard of Harley Quinn. I'm not sure. I've never heard of Deadshot. I've never heard of Mr. Boomerang. I've never heard of Killer Croc. Most of these guys are ridiculous.
Yeah, I had absolutely no idea until probably about 2 months ago when you started seeing all the Suicide Squad actors starting to appear in things and promote the movie, and you saw them on all the front covers of all the pop culture magazines. Before that, I had absolutely no idea. I'd never heard of Suicide Squad. I did not know what it referred to. And so despite that, I went into this movie with a very open mind because somebody said, you know, it's basically based on, it's another one of these movies based on DC Comics, and people who read the comic books know these characters and were very excited to see them hit the big screen. And so I went into it with an open mind. I was ready to at least enjoy it to the degree that I enjoy a lot of the other superhero movies. But this one's about villains trying to be good in some way, or a whole cast of villains that are bad, but not as bad as the people they fight. And that, to me, that's just not what I want from a superhero flick.
If all you knew from this movie was preview commercials and press clippings, you would think Harley Quinn, played by Margot Robbie, she's the girl from Wolf of Wall Street and Focus, and recently Tarzan.
And the bathtub scene in Big Short.
Yeah, you would think this is her movie. She's the lead character, and everyone else is supporting her because she's the face. And she's the face because she was squeezed into some very tight shorts.
No. She's the face because she is the only decent part of this movie.
She's thin.
No, not at all.
The character is pencil thin.
I don't care. She's the only time I enjoyed this movie at all was when Harley Quinn was front and center.
Will Smith has one of the most recognizable faces on planet Earth. He's one of America's top three biggest superstars. And his character is more central to the film than Harley Quinn's. He's kind of the main villain. He's the leader. And he's kind of absent from the marketing. It's all Margot Robbie.
No, I've seen a few things where Margot Robbie and Will Smith have appeared together in some of the junket things. And I think that was a smart move. I think they did that because the scenes with the most heart and that are most interesting in this movie are actually, I think, the ones that that have those two characters interacting, because there's a sort of on-screen chemistry I found between them. I thought it was interesting that they were almost setting up this potential for eventually a bit of a love triangle, perhaps, with the Joker, who Harley Quinn is, I don't know what you'd call it, obsessed with.
I think second place in the previews and the internet is the Joker, played by Oscar winner Jared Leto from Dallas Buyers Club. And from what my wife would say is my so-called life, Jordan Catalano. He's the Joker. The problem is the Joker's in the film for about 4 minutes. And he's a weird Joker.
Yeah.
He's overdoing it. He cackles. It's very strange. His makeup is awesome. He looks like an insane Joker, which he's supposed to be. He's supposed to be not right in the head. And that's why. And his girl is Harley Quinn. She's also not right in the head. And
Absolutely.
That's actually his fault. He made her not right in the head. He's very powerful that way. So it's those two, and they have a story. You know, she's fighting to save the world, and he's fighting to save her. You know, get her out of the Suicide Squad. So he's on the periphery here. He bops in every now and then for like 10 seconds and then bops out again. And he's hardly there.
Yeah, I mean, the movie, from a narrative perspective, is a hot mess. It just is. There was like the big leathery guy. I wasn't quite sure where he came from. There was Boomerang. I have no idea what that character's
contribution. That guy's obnoxious.
And I had no idea what his contribution really was.
He didn't have one.
Yeah, so it was forced interaction with some of this stuff. And again, the reason I liked Harley was just because she had some great little lines. And I think Margot Robbie was excellent casting for that particular role. And she really pulled it off. But overall, the movie, unfortunately, just, I was bored. And that's shocking for me for anything even remotely resembling a superhero action flick.
It was boring. I got tired of watching it. Only two characters, I think, had any depth at all. One is Deadshot. And that's only because they gave him an 11-year-old daughter who wants daddy to stop being a supervillain. Daddy, I know you're the best shot in the world and you can never miss and you always get headshots right in the center of the forehead. But don't do it for hire. Be a good guy. So that gives him a layer. The other one is Diablo. Diablo is the Mexican gang lord who can shoot directed fire out of his palms. And he has a backstory, a very sad past, and that gives him a layer. Everyone else, the Boomerang guy, Katana, this
right.
Japanese chick who shows up with no explanation.
Yeah, and a sword.
I'm not going to give his name or what happens to him, but a guy who shows up for a good 6 minutes, and you can say, they say he climbs walls, he disappears.
Yeah.
So only two characters really have any depth whatsoever. And it also leads into, I'm going to call it the X-Men problem. You're familiar with the X-Men a little bit.
Sure.
Everyone's, the most famous, the most beloved X-Man is Wolverine, the guy with claws. And when
Hugh
you think
Jackman.
About it, he's actually the least powerful. You've got an ex-woman, Storm, who can control the weather. She can do thunderstorms, tornadoes, and hurricanes, yet she is relegated to the background all the time to a guy with metal claws coming out of his knuckles.
Not just a guy with metal claws coming out of his knuckles, it's Hugh Jackman.
But he, when you think about it, he's like the least powerful X-Man.
But it's Hugh Jackman.
So the Suicide Squatters, the most powerful by far Suicide Squatter is Diablo. If he wanted to, he could take everybody out in a second. And why is Harley Quinn so popular? The only thing she does, she mashes people with a baseball bat. That is not power. That's a thug. You know, you got directed fire burning down buildings against a girl with a bat.
Methinks you're overthinking it. I think Harley is good only for her comic relief. And yeah, so if you really wanted to try and break down the powers of each of these folks, yeah, you would find that there really is no reason for why some are given more screen time than others. The script just isn't there. The script's not very good. For me, the worst part was that it took them, I think I looked at my watch, and it was a solid 40 minutes of setup.
It's a lot of introductions.
By the time they introduce several of these characters and their backstories and start describing that basically all these guys are being... the idea is that they're being recruited into this government sort of black ops operation that would have them be expendable in fighting these really, 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 really evil people or things from wherever. I don't even know where these enemies were supposedly coming from. Another world?
They're from Earth, but they're so old. It's like a smoke witch thing.
I did not understand the plot. I just didn't get...
They, like, come from the time from Apocalypse, from X-Men Apocalypse, like, way back there.
So I couldn't care less, and it was sort of like, if you compared it to modern-day times, it'd be like if you said, we are going to recruit the Axis of Evil to help us go fight ISIL, you know? It's like, these guys are really bad, but oh my gosh, there's guys that are even worse, and so let's make a deal with them. And we'll give them clemency and let them out of prison early to go fight these really, 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 really bad evil dudes. And if they happen to die in the process, so be it. Thus, the name Suicide Squad. And it took them a full hour to make the reference to explain why that is the name that they go by.
Well, I think I know why the script stinks. It's written and directed by David Ayer. He wrote Training Day. Awesome. He wrote Fury. Remember Brad Pitt in the World War II and the tanks? Mm-hmm. Awesome movie. He's directed some amazing movies. He directed Fury. He directed End of Watch. He directed Harsh Times. Very young, I think, Christian Bale in that one. So he's directed some gritty, grimy, violent films. Warner Brothers, who owns Suicide Squad and the DC Comics, rushed this. They said, we need to get this out. We're behind Marvel. We are behind Disney. Let's get this done. They gave him 6 weeks to write this. And it feels like this is a draft. It's, okay, I got the characters in the movie somehow. The villain's weak. The dialogue is weak. Everything else is weak. But I got everybody here. Okay, here, your 6 weeks are up, so let's start filming. Go. That's why the script stinks.
Well, that's an interesting point, because I did see something where Will Smith said in an interview that he signed on because, I think, of the director, script unseen. And so he was so excited to just work on this movie without ever having seen a script. And so I think that's very telling, that I'm not so sure if he'd seen a script that he wouldn't have said, wait a second.
Maybe we should do a rewrite.
Very good. Let's give it a little more time. And you mentioned Marvel and trying to compete. To me, this doesn't even come close. I mean, all the DC comic movies to me are so much darker than the Marvel ones, and I never enjoy them as much. And so this is like Avengers gone bad.
I was going to ask you, I'll say this sentence, I want you to respond to it. The Suicide Squad is no Avengers.
It is no Avengers. It's not even close. And I love the Avengers. I love the interaction between those characters. There was not enough depth and character development to really enjoy any of the interactions, other, again, than I said, between the Margot Robbie, the Harley Quinn character, and Will Smith's Deadshot character. I think that was the only time where, and again, she would just say things that were snarky and funny and sarcastic, and that's, I think, she was probably the most Avengers-like in her portrayal and in her dialogue. And I think that's why that resonated with me. But this isn't even in the same league as the Avengers or even as the Justice League might be.
You know, you have those singular Avengers movies, the Iron Man, the Captain America, and Thor, even Thor. And I can't imagine a solo Killer Croc movie.
No. I can't. Well, and again, they're not heroes. So it's like, who? It's very strange to me.
Yeah, it's tough to root for them.
You don't know who you're supposed to really be rooting for. And you find yourself being sympathetic towards these bad guys because they're put in these situations where they're trying to eliminate badder guys. And why do you need that in a world, in a comic world, where you supposedly have Batman and Wonder Woman and, God forbid, even Deadpool? Why in the world would you call upon this particular group to save humanity? To me, if they're all in the same, living in that same universe, I don't see any reason to turn to the Suicide Squad versus the Justice League.
That's true. Was Batman busy that day?
Exactly. And he does make a quick appearance, but...
Careful.
Yeah, no spoilers, but the Caped Crusader, you know, there is a little bit of him in here. But so, just so you know that he occupies the same space.
Yeah, it's the same world. It's actually, this movie picks up at the end of Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice.
Right.
Because, you know, I can't tell you what happened at the end of that movie, but that's actually where this starts. And it starts because, what did you think of Viola Davis?
You know, Viola Davis, she's fine, but it's sort of like she's just in one of these roles.
She's cold-blooded.
She's cold. She's in one of these roles, though, that has become that she's sort of like the equivalent, I would say, to the guy who runs S.H.I.E.L.D., you know?
Samuel L. Jackson?
Samuel L. Jackson, but she's bad. She's like her own weird...
That's because Samuel L. Jackson didn't have to threaten to kill Iron Man to get him to work.
Exactly. Yeah, so Viola Davis was fine in her portrayal of that role, but again, not a sympathetic character, and I didn't like enough of them to like this movie, and it did not come together, and unfortunately... God, I mean, I really hope that they take note and don't try to rush a second Suicide Squad.
I think we're going to get one.
I think we will, if for no other reason than no matter what anybody says, this movie's going to do phenomenally well in its open. Yeah. The real difference, though, is that I would not recommend this movie to anyone other than the fandom group. The fanboys and girls who have read the comics, know the comics, or have just been absolutely looking forward to seeing this movie. Anybody who had not heard of Suicide Squad before this week should not bother going to see this movie.
Yeah, okay. You mentioned Deadpool. I said go see Deadpool again.
There you go.
One last thing before we move on. So I mentioned David Ayer. He wrote Training Day and Fury, two action films with weight, with depth. But he also wrote the first Fast and the Furious. Kind of along the same lines as this movie. It's an action film, but with no weight, with no depth. It's more about gee whiz spectacular.
But better.
they both stink.
No. Fast and Furious.
The first one.
Okay. It's not fine art, but if I had to put the first Fast and Furious up against Suicide Squad, I still enjoyed Fast and Furious more.
Well, now for something completely different. Hannah saw... at the AFI Docs Film Festival, a very, what everyone's saying is very moving, very heartfelt documentary called Gleason. Tell us about Gleason.
Yeah, talk about your 360 turn here. Gleason is so different and will not even begin to crack the audience that Suicide Squad does. Although, I'll tell you, I mean, it was probably the most powerful and moving of the AFI Docs that I saw back in June. And so it definitely has stuck with me. It's about Steve Gleason, who was this football player, professional football player. He played for the New Orleans Saints. He was probably best known for, I guess he had some blocked punt from during the first game back that helped New Orleans win in their first game back in the Superdome after Hurricane Katrina. So that was really, he was a superstar. He was just one of these people that was.
Remember
just,
that game.
Yeah. And so he was really the star that came out of that game and represented so much of the recovery of New Orleans at the time and just what the people of New Orleans really needed. And so fast forward a couple of years, he's retired. He's only 34, I think, and he gets diagnosed with ALS.
Oh.
With, commonly known as Lou Gehrig's disease. And it is a brutal, brutal degenerative disease, and there is no cure. And I guess he ended up, he and his wife ended up being pregnant soon after his diagnosis. And so he decides that because he was only given 2 to 5 years to live after diagnosis, that he was going to record sort of a video diary for his kid. And so that's why there's all this incredible footage, is that throughout the course of his degeneration, you actually see what he's going through because he's recording these daily or weekly videos to share with his son. And so it's interesting, he is still alive, and he's lived longer, I think, probably than a lot of people originally expected. He's undergone, he's tried so many different things, but he's been this major inspiration and driving force in research and fundraising to help people with ALS. And so it's one of those movies that's incredibly difficult to watch, but the message is very powerful, and you just see, what he's going through. And I mean, it really was just, it was sad. It was one of those few movies where I definitely left the theater teary-eyed and with just a strong sense of, wow, this disease really sucks. And it takes a lot of, young, healthy, vibrant people, and it just spirals, and there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. And the movie does a very good job of really kind of showing the impact that it has not only on Steve Gleason, but on his wife and his parents and his young son and his friends.
Now, is this your favorite documentary of 2016 so far?
It's hard to say. I haven't really paid all that much attention. It's probably the one that stuck with me the most. Mm. I would say that. I'm not sure it's necessarily the best, the most well-done documentary, but when you take the fact that there's this real footage, when you're coming after, you know, a month after I had seen one of your not-so-favorite movies, Me Before You.
Ooh. Actually, I never saw
you
that.
Never no. saw Me Before You. Well, Me Before You kind of, you know, puts out there this what happens when you have this adventurous playboy kind of guy who loves life, embraces life, you know, sort of trapped in a physical, you know, just physically trapped by disease, or in Me Before You's case, by an accident. But with this, you kind of get that same general idea, you know, like, wow, how do you make these decisions about when is life worth living? What do you push through and try and still do? There are definitely times where Steve Gleason probably thinks about just throwing in the towel. And so the difference is that Me Before You is fiction, and you're just watching this dramatized version of a story. Whereas with Steve Gleason, you know, you are seeing in real time what is going on and what is happening to this guy. And that part of it, to realize that, is simply heartbreaking.
Well, I noticed on the internet and out in the real world, the documentary Gleason's getting a big push. You don't usually see that for documentaries, only a handful a year. Usually Michael Moore docs, or really ones that they're pushing for an Oscar, maybe Alex Gibney documentaries, right. Or Werner Herzog documentaries. But Gleason's getting a big push.
He is getting a big push. I think, you know, it did well at Sundance, so I think that was part of it. And there's a lot of...
It won Best Doc at the Seattle International Film Festival.
There you go. Yeah. And it's ALS has been in the news. It's interesting with the timing because, you know, you have Team Gleason. He sort of has this foundation where... he helps others with ALS because he knows that his resources were stronger than a lot of others, that they can go bankrupt, really, with this disease. And he also wanted anyone else with ALS to really still maintain that sense, the adventurous spirit, and be able to go out and experience as much as they can. And so his foundation helps them do that. But I did notice, like, in the past week or two, there was a big story about how the Ice Bucket Challenge that the money that was raised from the Ice Bucket Challenge is now credited with these advances in research.
Did you do the Ice Bucket Challenge?
I did the Ice Bucket Challenge. I did indeed. You can find it on YouTube somewhere. But actually, I called it the Ice Cube Challenge. I cheated.
Hannah,
it was the
you're
ice
cheating
tray.
ALS.
I know,
Hannah.
It was the Ice Tray Challenge, but I sent my check. So that's the important thing. And it was also because I actually, at that same time, I had a high school friend who had ALS. And so I saw how quickly, and this was a guy who was on the high school baseball team, soccer team, and just a fantasy baseball player, was very active. And so this friend of mine was diagnosed, I think, 45, and was dead within 2 years.
Ooh.
And to see the progression of that disease and how rapidly he went from just being incredibly physically fit to not being able to speak and having to use these computer programs where you actually blink to send signals to the computer to communicate with people. And by the end of Gleason, that's kind of where he was at in this movie. So it definitely resonated on a personal level too. And so I think anybody who's been touched by ALS or knows anyone with ALS or is interested in learning more about it, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, I believe, would be the
look at you, dude.
The medical term for it. Then this movie is definitely, it's just one of those rare documentaries that is heartbreaking and inspiring at the same time.
Well, Gleason sounds awesome, and I look forward to catching up with it. I'm going to see it. Before we end tonight, I wanted to talk about a couple films newly released on DVD. You know, five or six are released every week. We don't cover those a lot. But I just the first one I want to mention is Keanu. Keanu is probably the strongest or one of the strongest comedies this year. You know, Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele, Key and Peele. This is their first film together after ending their very successful, very popular show on Comedy Central. They play suburban guys who get involved in gang warfare, and they have to pretend they are gangbangers when they're really not, all to get the beloved cat Keanu. It's hysterical. There's a sub joke in there, on running gag about George Michael. I laughed so hard at this film. I still laugh about it some nights when I think about it. If you haven't seen Keanu yet and you want a night to sit down on the couch and laugh, Keanu.
It's a solid adult comedy. It's definitely one of the best adult comedies that we've seen so far this year. So I would agree with that, and that's coming from somebody who never saw Key and Peele, never watched the show.
But you can see they have chemistry.
Yeah, absolutely. I laughed a lot during Keanu, so I say sure, go for it.
Do you have a recommendation?
I don't know if you'd call it a recommendation. It's more like a tribute suggestion.
I see where you're going here.
So, and especially since it comes on the heels of Bad Moms being out there right now, it reminded me of a movie that is now actually out on DVD called Mother's Day.
Oh, I've heard about this.
Yes. So you may remember that Mother's Day was, another one in the series of like Valentine's Day, Labor Day, New Year's Eve, I think were the
Labor
other
Day was
ones.
Different, but I
Labor
see what
Labor Day
you're
was a little different. But yeah, so they were all done by Gary Marshall, the late, great, recently departed Gary Marshall.
Tell us about Gary Marshall. What did he direct?
So he directed some great stuff. I mean, he directed Princess Diaries. I was an extra in Princess Diaries,
I thought you said
too.
Great stuff, Hannah.
He directed, don't mock my, Princess Diaries was a great movie. So maybe Pretty Woman.
All right, there you go.
Pretty Woman, Runaway Bride.
Kind
so
of the Pretty Woman sequel.
He likes a lot of Julia Roberts movies, and Julia Roberts is in Mother's Day, too. But in TV, I mean, we're talking Happy Days, Mork and Mindy, Laverne and Shirley. We're talking, you know.
So
deep
like
culture stuff. Norman Lear Light. I mean, the thing about Gary Marshall, and I might also mention that he's a Northwestern alum, as am I. He really incredibly prolific, but a crowd-pleasing kind of actor, director, writer, producer type.
Wait, are you recommending people go see Mother's Day?
I am saying that if you like Bad Moms, you might like Mother's Day, too.
To tell them that we have a... Every time we go to screenings, we sit with, the normal critics in the critics row, and we see the same guys a couple times every week. And Hannah took so much flack for kind of, sort of liking Mother's Day. And everyone else said it's the worst movie of the entire year, the worst movie they've ever seen. But Hannah, it's like, you know what? It's not the worst movie ever.
Exactly.
I think you might have said it's even okay.
Yeah.
You took so much grief
for
this.
I took grief for not hating it enough, apparently. And I think back, and there are plenty of movies where I go, oh my gosh, I remember that movie was just horrendous. And I didn't feel that way about Mother's Day. I thought it was weak. It was formulaic, but it was not Gary Marshall's best work. It's kind of sad that his last movie was not his best. But I think I enjoyed Mother's Day as much as I enjoyed Bad Moms.
I haven't seen Mother's Day. I can't. I'm going to watch it because very rare. The same week it comes out on DVD. In fact, it comes out on Tuesday. It just popped up on Netflix streaming. That just doesn't happen. So I wonder what's going on there.
Well, it could just be because, you know, they don't have to worry about the royalties now. I don't know. But I give it a shot. Find out. I need some backup. Just let me know if you think it's the worst movie you've ever seen. And if not, you have to defend me against all those folks that we sit with.
No, my number one worst movie I've ever seen will never be eclipsed. So, Sweet Home Alabama, starring Reese Witherspoon.
Oh, my God, I love that movie.
Worst movie ever made.
We're going to have a whole podcast on that one
someday. I'm ready. I have a diatribe stupid movie.
Oh, Sweet Home Alabama is a... excellent chick flick.
I'm not going to go into it now.
Oh, what a
great
chick flick.
But there are reasons. That is, I can't even think about the movie
without being mad. The glass making and the sand. Oh my goodness, now you have me thinking about that one. Because who's the guy in it?
Who cares?
Oh, no, that was a good one. Now, that's a good... No. That's one of those TBS, TNT, catch it 100 different times and
awful,
pick it up.
Awful, awful movie. No. It's probably directed by Gary Marshall.
I'm going to go say now, just for Charlie, skip Mother's Day and watch Sweet Home Alabama.
That hurts my soul, Hannah.
No, that's... They're not... Oh, my gosh, it's not even... How can that be... Oh.
I can't wait until we have this. I can't wait to tell you why. And usually when I go off on this and I tell people why, they actually end up kind of, you know what, you're right, but I still like it.
Well, and you know what?
But you're gonna say I'm right.
I might say you're right, but I bet you I'd also say, but I still like it.
I guarantee you're still going, it's okay, it's fine.
All right.
I briefly want to plug one more. High Rise.
Oh!
I do. Hannah didn't even get through it. I think you gave it 10 minutes, maybe.
No, I think I watched the first sci-fi hour
based
and then the last 10 minutes.
A mid-70s book. It takes place in an apartment building. Class warfare breaks out between the top floors and the bottom floors. Taylor Swift's new boyfriend, Tom Hiddleston, is the lead. Jeremy Irons is the architect living up top. This movie was... It's still in my head, Hannah. I'm still thinking about it.
I wanted to jump out of that high rise. No. And now I'm even more flabbergasted that you can rail on Sweet Home Alabama.
High Rise is a great movie. If we're talking about renting DVDs, it's a great rental.
It's weird. It's weird.
Slash, so, awesome.
But people need to be, they need to be warned that that this is a, that High Rise is just plain weird. And
you know what? Put yourself
violent.
Out there sometimes.
It's violent. I did. I tried watching
that. You didn't
that.
Finish it.
I
you
watched,
don't know.
I watched at least an hour. And then I skimmed through some of it and watched the last 10 minutes.
Well, then shame on you. You can't even judge the movie.
And I think I can judge it well enough. But yeah, no, High Rise was not a highlight for me at all.
All right. Well, to recap this episode, two thumbs, I guess, down for the obnoxious, the sour, the sore, the weird, the not fun Suicide Squad.
The boring.
The boring. The rushed. Yeah. And not the Avengers.
Yes.
Gleason?
Gleason, I think, definitely is documentaries go. For anyone who enjoys a good documentary, I would seek this one out.
And after the contentious rental, I think we agree, just go see Keanu. Just go see
Absolutely.
Keanu.
Absolutely.
All right, so thank you for listening this evening. I am Charlie Jewell, alongside Hannah Bookdoll.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buckdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.